Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 150 of DM Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How you doing tonight, Ben?
I am keeping the energy up because it's late, and we're both tired, and you know what? I'm not going to let that stand. So... Rah, I don't know what I'm doing. But yeah, no, we're keeping this energy.
Crew having no energy.
Yeah, we're look, fake it until you make it. That's DM lesson number one. So we're just going to fake number it until we make it. And what we're making is this episode.
And kind of a momentous episode.
Yeah.
150?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, we said that if we got to 15, we would like keep it going, and now we're 10 times that.
Yeah, it's good. I'm really excited. There's a whole lot of year that is going to be incredible. And I guess we can talk about that first. It's really interesting because we talked a little bit about how we don't actually know what's coming out from official D&D this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because we've seen a lot of new hires, like four or five new people joining the D&D design team, which is pretty huge. Again, it's like a big, you know, changing of the guard type thing, but we don't really have any product announcements.
No.
For this year yet. I mean, literally the only thing they've announced is the first quarter third party material that's going on D&D Beyond. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I'm okay with that because my wallet likes a breather now and then. So I don't mind that.
That's fair.
I mean, I will say, like, ever since the 2024 rule book started coming out, you know, they've released a decent amount of stuff and it's all been pretty good, but now we're getting that new blood in. And granted, there's probably still stuff that, you know, was worked on, you know, well before those new hires came in. But, you know, once that wave of releases happens, I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, any new ideas, revisits of old adventures or campaign settings. And especially with like such a diverse group, we're going to be seeing a lot of different things coming out that, you know, we've never really seen before. So it's a really exciting time to be in this space, to, you know, be a fan and to just, you know, look ahead to, you know, well, an optimistic future at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, from what I understand, the lead time for books is like 1 to 2 years. So as stuff comes out, that's stuff that will have probably been done like, you know, a year ago,
mm-hmm.
or have been worked on that long ago. So we probably won't see anything that is specifically just this new design team until probably next year sometime. So that'll be really interesting to kind of gauge what, you know, what comes this year, what it is, and then what comes next year and what it is, because that's when a lot of, the people who had been there for a while and have left now, that will be like where they will not have their hands in that anymore.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that I'm actually kind of excited about is the fact that, so we're almost in March, which is going to be the end of the first quarter of the year. And there hasn't been anything that's been, you know, kind of just thrown out or rushed or anything. So, you know, this is just optimistic Ben here, but it looks like Hasbro is letting the releases and stuff kind of stew and take the time that they need, instead of just pushing them out the door to meet, you know, quarterly numbers or something. So hopefully that's a trend that keeps going on and, you know, quality, I mean,
that's our hope,
gets better and better. Yeah. As opposed to, oh, nothing's actually,
let it bake until it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hope. So,
yeah,
I mean, considering the, you know, very aggressive release schedule that they had last year, I think it's a good sign.
I'm really interested to know when the whole back end data D&D Beyond rework will be done.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's going to open the floodgates to a large amount of D&D Beyond updates and quality of life stuff.
Yeah, I really think so too. My goal, or my, you know what? I'm not a betting man, but I'm going to say that it is going to be done by November of this year, because it is a big rework that they're, you know, talking about or have been talking about doing. So I'm thinking that it's going to be probably in some sort of beta form before then, but the official release will be sometime in November. Just a guess.
That could be good. What would be super cool is if we get some of the more unique third-party classes mm-hmm. launching when the rework launches.
Yes.
As kind of a, hey, here's what we can do with this now type thing, right? Like the talent, let's just say, from MCDM. That is a very unique, has a ton of its own custom stuff. Would probably be kind of hard to implement some of it. Maybe same with the Beast Heart.
Yeah, no, that'd be really good.
So it would be cool to see those drop with like the new date backend rework as kind of a, hey, here's what we can do now type thing.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So we can hope.
And I mean, it makes sense that, you know, they would put something like that in with a big update to kind of, you know, coincide with it, like, you know, the new shiny and stuff. You know, in the very least, let us have the third party, you know, classes and subclasses work right now. I mean, that's got to be like one of the first goals, I hope.
But some of them don't.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There are still features missing. There's still features missing from official classes.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, that is the hope. That is the hope. But we will see. We will see. I assume, being that we're already halfway through February, we will get announcements of some sort here pretty soon. Because, well, I mean, here in the next 4 or 5 weeks, we'll get announcements for the Q2 third party release schedule.
Yeah. And I mean, we're recording today, so by Wednesday, they'll probably have some sort of announcement that comes out, because it happened just last time. So
it's just how it goes. It's just how it goes.
You know what? And that's okay.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, if they're really waiting for us to put out an episode, they'd be like, okay, they're out, we're good. It gives them time to stew on it and think about it so they can discuss it. That's what it all comes down to.
That's right. I'm sure it's just for us.
Oh yeah, of course.
But there is one cool new thing to talk about news wise. And this honestly was kind of out of left field. They just recently, like a week ago, announced that there's going to be a Baldur's Gate TV series that is going to be airing on HBO. And the interesting thing is that it's going to be a continuation of the Baldur's Gate 3 story. So it will take place post the game, which will be interesting. So this is going to be done, helmed by The Last of Us co-creator Craig Mazin. For those who have been watching The Last of Us. And it talks about it's going to take place after the events of the RPG and follow the characters players grew to love over time as they grapple with the aftermath of its world-changing ending, which is interesting because there's kind of a canon ending.
They're
but
making
not
a
really.
Canon ending is what it is. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Just so like, my guess is like, it's going to be, Elder Brain, all that stuff happens.
Well, first of all, spoilers for Baldur's
Gate
3.
All the characters survived. Yeah. It's been out for 2 years.
It's a very long, in-depth game.
Almost 2 years.
There are some people who still haven't finished it yet. Just tossing that out there. We'll talk about it for a bit. Anyways. The idea of the fact that it is going to be a canonized ending is interesting to me. But on top of that, too, Larian has no involvement whatsoever with this. So,
at least not at this point.
Yeah. And which I mean,
sucks. I feel like that's just asking for trouble for one. Like, yeah. Regardless, I know it says he's a fan. I've put 1,000 hours into Baldur's Gate 3, and he's really excited about it, which good. That's great. That's solid amount of playtime for a game. But if you've got, I don't see how hard it would be to get access to Larian and like their writers and stuff.
Yeah.
Like they're right there. Get some consulting going.
But I mean, you see, this is a really tricky kind of situation because we're looking at it. Larian's not involved. They created the game. Yes. They, you know, worked with WotC on this to around Baldur's Gate 3, you know, for the environment, characters, story, plot line, stuff like that. But going forward, I mean, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but like Astarion and Karlak are all over stuff for, you know, like the Faerun books. You know, they're definitely being sucked into the Forgotten Realms proper. So at that point, they are WotC's characters. I mean, they were before, but, you know, they're the ones who are kind of handling their continuation and storytelling and stuff like that. So I can see where Larian doesn't need to be involved in this. However, if they're going to be referencing the game at all, I really think that having them in some sort of capacity, whether it's, you know, story beats or, you know, whatever, is really important to this. Now, you know, I'm not a TV show runner. I don't know if you knew that about me or not, Ryan. I actually don't produce television shows.
What?
So I know.
Wow.
So
bubble burst.
So my whole knowledge on how all that works and stuff is, you know, this is me, you know, armchair quarterbacking, and I'm mixing metaphors here. But I will say this, seeing what's been done to The Last of Us TV show compared to the two games, I am really optimistic with this. You know, generally in the past, any sort of video game adaptation into, you know, TV, movie, things like that, you know, before maybe what, 5 years ago, maybe less than that, like everything was trash. But now we're starting to get things that are, you know, really faithful to the game or are adapted very well. There's still a lot of misses out there, but from what I've seen, like The Last of Us is probably the best adaptation of the storyline of the first game and of the, like the first half of the second game, since, you know, there's going to be season 3 that follows more of,
yeah,
of
a, I've heard nothing but praise for season 1.
Yeah. And I mean, it's absolutely mind blowing how good it was. You know, they did what you do in, you know, taking a video game adaptation to a TV show and, you know, had to make some changes because you have to do that. You can't tell the same exact story. And every time that they did make edits, did make changes, and like especially swung for the fences on those changes, it worked. So seeing that interpretation and change and everything really gives me hope that, you know, it's at least being looked at from a storytelling perspective in a good way. Capturing the magic of Baldur's Gate 3, though, that could be the hardest part because there is so much there. There are so many varied gameplays and play styles and everything that are encompassed in that. So, you know,
picking an ending.
Yeah.
Number one
with
is going to rankle feathers regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a big mountain just right off the bat.
Yeah. I mean, there's huge things that happen with pretty much every character that can go one way or another. So who's to say what they are deeming as the correct way, or are they just going to start the whole series off with like a end of the movie clue explanation of like, here's one way it could have gone, and then just go with the story? Who knows? you know, we'll have to see, you know, what happens.
I feel like that's probably, like, I assume whatever ending they do, all the main characters, quote unquote, will survive.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can use them, because that's, I mean, they even acknowledge they want those characters to show up again.
Yeah.
In also a mix with brand new characters, right? So I assume they will have that in some way, shape, or form. At least they do mention that they are going to be reaching out to all of the cast of the game on how best to approach their roles in the TV show and if they'd want to be involved. Because I feel like several of them, if not most of them, could probably play their characters in live action.
Oh, yes. Hands down. I mean, if you've seen any of the actual plays that they've participated in, like, they're just really encapsulating the characters, just, you know, role playing at a table. So throw them into an actual, like, you know, live action, well, not live action, role playing, acting as their characters and stuff. I mean, it'll be really great. And I can definitely see that as a possibility of happening, you know. And as for looking like their characters, a lot of them look, you know, decently like their characters, and, you know, put them in there. And if not, who cares? Just cast who works, and the voice actors work, you know. I would just be so excited just to have Neil as Astarion. Like, aside from that, like,
I think that's the one everyone really wants.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Like, you can't have anybody else really, like, voice that in at such the, you know, I can't think of the right word, but, you know, the right way.
It'd be a slam dunk casting.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
For him. For sure.
Definitely. But yeah, that being said though, it's going to be interesting to see, like, how his character is portrayed and what happened. You know, Shadowheart's character, Gale's, like, there's a lot of really different things that can happen depending on, you know, what happened in the game. Like, Karlach could be entirely different, which I'm leaving that to an interpretation, because again, some people haven't played, or some people haven't played through all the different options you can go through. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes. I'm looking forward to it.
I am cautiously optimistic at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It will be good to see D&D finally get a big live action property beyond the movie that was really good. That sadly got sandwiched in between John Wick and Super Mario Brothers, which was not super great for its box office.
Yeah, but at the same time, the movie itself was amazing.
Yeah, the movie was incredible. It was not marketed well enough, and it was not scheduled super well. Yeah. To give it the room to breathe and the legs that it needed. And I'm sad that we probably will never get a sequel.
Yeah.
To it.
But so that being said, again,
I want to see more of that.
Oh yeah.
Like, make that in TV show form with the Baldur's Gate 3 cast. Like, I'll eat that up.
But here's the thing. Baldur's Gate 3 is such a different tone than the movie was. So again, everybody's playthrough is different. So finding the right version of that is going to be a little tough. Like, if they make it too silly, don't get me wrong, I would love it and everything would be great. Like, I'm the person who always has Speak with Animals on, so I can talk to every cat in Baldur's Gate because they're all amazing. But you know, some people will be turned off by that. And if we want the show to continue going forward, they have to get the right tone with the right amount of, like, you know, fun and, you know, overarching, like, oh, this is a huge, you know, big story and stuff. It's like, it's almost like, you know, homebrewing a really good D&D campaign. You have to hit all the right notes so that all the players are happy the whole time. And I do not envy them for that part of it. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. I hope they get it right. I really do. Because it has a lot of potential. A lot of potential for sure.
Yeah. But
all right.
Optimism is still seeing me through at this point.
I don't know enough about it yet. So I will remain cautiously optimistic. All right. So let's move on to a listener question that we've been wanting to get to for a little bit, and it's finally time. This is a really interesting one because there's a lot of potential around campaigns and epilogues that can happen. So the question real fast is, hi, I'm planning to wrap up one of my campaigns in May and plan to start prepping an epilogue. How do you go about prepping epilogues?
Easy.
Great question.
Easy. Easiest answer ever. As soon as they kill the BBEG, you just say, it's over. And then, you know, go grab a piece of pizza or something.
So you can do that.
We don't recommend it, though.
Or if you want it to be satisfying, you should plan it a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? That does sound like a better option now that I think about it.
Cool. So epilogues are really interesting because no one ever plans for their campaign to get cut short, right? You all always try and go into it going, okay, we're going to actually go from here to here, and this kind of beat or this kind of story arc is going to be kind of the end. What I usually do is when I'm making a new campaign, I come up with, not even necessarily down to arcs at first, I just come up with a, hey, here's my starting location, and then here's kind of what is going on this campaign, and then here is the end or the end goal or the big bad, and then how we get to that point could be anything, right?
Exactly.
And you kind of go in and you kind of fill those in and you dive deeper and drill deeper as you do more planning, as sessions start to happen, etc. At this point, I have ended three campaigns. One of them was ended not at the point I wanted. Whereas two of them were ended more or less either where I wanted or at a good stopping point.
Yeah.
So I guess first thing, you said this particular person is ending their campaign in May. The first thing I would say is when you're planning an end of a campaign or an epilogue, one of the first things I ask myself is, has the main arc of the campaign been fulfilled?
Mm-hmm.
Or what I was hoping to be the main arc of the campaign? That's number one. Number two, have all the characters fulfilled the arcs that they want to fulfill? Have all the character beats wrapped up? Has everything happened, right? And number three, if it's not ending at a spot that I necessarily had planned on, if you're going to have to wrap it up early, or maybe someone's moving and you're not going to be able to finish it or something like that, ask yourself, where is the satisfying ending of the current story arc? and plan from there.
Yeah, I definitely agree. If you're able to, you know, have the overall arc, come to an end point, that's great. If the characters aren't able to, you have to take steps for that. If you're not able to finish the overall arc, you have to take steps for that. There's basically, you need, like Ryan was essentially saying, you need to find the level of completeness that you are going to be finishing. And based off of that, that's where you can kind of start looking at, you know, possibilities, options, where you need to go. Should we just kind of break it down by like levels here? Because if you look at it, so let's just start on the big arc of the campaign. You know, if they we're going to assume that they're finishing it, since, you know, you're already planning on wrapping up the campaign, I'm assuming that that's kind of going to be the end point. So for your prep, for just specifically world, story, things like that, I think you need to have ideas of what, you know, what a victory would be, you know, what would happen, how the world will be affected, you know, think a year, 2 year, 3 years out of this, you know, so that your players' characters can have, you know, maybe like, some sort of happy ending, or at least see the effects and changes of what they've done to the world around them. If there's a chance, like a really good chance, that they might not actually succeed, then have, you know, the really, you know, the super bad ending figured out too. You know, like if there's a TPK, or they sacrifice themselves to, you know, finish their goal or something, you know, like have a couple different ideas on, you know, what can happen, where it can go based off of how you think the final encounter could play out. And I mean, it could be anything. It could be, you know, they sacrifice themselves, or they fail, but they're able to stop the ritual and it causes, you know, some sort of backlash or something. Maybe the heroes find themselves in the past so that they can, you know, stop it from happening from the very beginning. And then that's the story for another time or something. Or, you know, there's a TPK, but they're successful. Then you talk about how they ended up in, you know, their various afterlives. Or, you know, again, they're successful and they're rewarded by the kingdom or the Lord, or they're the ones in charge. You know, just kind of, you know, figure out how the world's going to be affected by this change to give that sort of satisfaction.
Yeah, and one thing I always tell people is, whatever your ending is, make sure you leave time for at least one session after it.
Yes.
Make sure you have a follow-up session that is, I know we're talking about prepping an epilogue, the actual epilogue, where there's not going to be any fighting. This is after the arc is completed. And it gives the players a chance to have closure, or finish up having closure. Whether that's the characters have died and there's some sort of afterlife type stuff that happens, whether that's giving the players a chance to write down what their character would continue to do. Especially if this is, obviously, if you're playing through a module, right? Kind of, you can give the characters kind of your send off, or kind of say what they would have done, or if there's some unresolved backstory pieces and things like that, you can play through those kind of in vignettes, which can be very fun and bring a good satisfying ending to characters. But especially if a game is taking place in something like your homebrew world, like mm-hmm. all my campaigns have taken place in my homebrew world. So what I like to do afterwards, whenever I wrap a campaign up, I always ask the players, what would your character like be doing? What would they continue to do? Where would they be, etc.? Because at that point, those characters become NPCs in the world.
Yes.
Like there is a chance that other players could encounter them or run into them, or potentially even a player who played in a previous campaign could come guest star if the location and the timing ends up working right for that character to show up again. Or I play them as well. But I always have the players leave me kind of a, what is your character doing? Where are they? What would their goals be, etc. after the campaign ended? Because their characters will live on if they survived the campaign. And so that, I think, is a really good epilogue piece, along with things like the vignettes to wrap up any sort of unfinished business. Mm-hmm. Like my second campaign, we ended at a really good arc. It was pretty much where I had anticipated us stopping. There was only potentially one thing from one character left that might have been doable. But I don't think any of the players or player characters would have wanted to do it, essentially. So yeah. It was something that was kind of a off-screen type thing. But afterwards, we had an actual session where it's just like we went through all the characters. We did little scenes together and we hopped around. And then the players all wrote down kind of, here's what my character would do in a very general fashion so that I can then fit them in and place them where I need them. But I want to get a general idea of what the characters are doing, what was happening with them. And then if I ever need to play them again, or if they need to show up, I have notes and I know what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another one of the big things too, is that you do need to very much bring your players in on this. You know, they've been a part of the journey with you this entire time. You know, they're the ones who are helping tell the story of the campaign, and they need to have, you know, agency and input into what happens with their characters and, you know, what they see for them in the future. It's a very important thing to, you know, be able to say, oh, well, no, my character doesn't want to be a farmer. Why would you tell them they would be a farmer, you know, without that sort of input or knowing, you know, kind of directions that they want to go and stuff. It's something that, you know, gives a lot of satisfaction to know that they've been with them this whole time and they can see them succeed into, you know, the future life that they're wanting after the game is over. Aside from that, though, one of the things that I think, like, as a character or as a player that I would want is, you know, knowing that. That's the best way to put it. Let's see. Knowing that my character is out there and knowing that. Sorry. I'm trying to collect my thoughts on this. It's the idea that, like you said, they are now NPCs in the world. And I think that an important thing with that is that you need to have a discussion with those players to see if they're okay with you using that character in the future in, you know, a different campaign. Just because, you know, they have kind of an ownership with that as well. You know, some people might not want their, you know, retired hero to, you know, go back out into the world and start adventuring again, while others might be, you know, all gung-ho about it and stuff. Especially if they actually did want to retire on the farm and, you know, just raise some chickens and, you know, that's their life going forward. But that being said, like, all that would be part of, you know, the players endpoints, their kind of epilogue that they're contributing as well. So just throwing that out there as a side note.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the biggest thing, if you know your time frames, as obviously sometimes things come up and campaigns have to end abruptly. And there are just going to be times when there's not a lot you can do about that, right? If nothing else, especially for those types, try and at least have a final session where you can narrate off a somewhat satisfying conclusion with the player input, right? Yeah. Even if it's not, even if it doesn't end up getting to the big bad fight. Like a really good example is one of my own my third campaign that I ran. It just ended up that schedules and time and life from other people, all the things just conspired against us at the time. And we had to end the campaign. And we were kind of at a somewhat pivotal point, but we were on like the down note, right? Mm-hmm. Things were kind of quiet, things were like slowly building, etc. So the last session that we had, we talked about where the characters were at and said, oh, I said, okay, if this campaign were to continue, because the world is real and the characters are living in it, and this might come up someday in a different campaign of mine, what would your characters continue to try and do? So at least I have the direction of what the characters are doing. So in this case, they were in this town and they were looking to try and liberate it from one faction to another, right? We never got to that part, but we talked through it and they said our characters would try and work through like the politicking and basically open up the defenses and rally whoever they can find to open this town up for another faction to attack and take over.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's kind of where we left it. But at the end of the day, that's really helpful for me because then I can use that in the future. But I think at the end of the day, what I'm saying is the most important thing is just always have some sort of if at all possible, have a closure session. Yeah. Even if it's just narration, even if it's just you and your players talking back and forth about your characters or about the current state of the world, always try and have something like that to provide good closure. And if you can do it in a way that is not rushed and that is pre-planned out, you can make that better, obviously, and you can make that more satisfying.
Exactly. You know, when the Lord of the Rings trilogy ended, yeah, the ring was thrown in Mount Doom. The, you know, armies of evil all died and everything like that. It didn't cut to black at that point. You found out what happened. There was that, you know, basically you get to the climax of the story and then you have the gradual just, you know, kind of like calming down. I forget exactly what that's called in writing and stuff, but you know, you get that downswing of like, you know, heightened senses and emotion and everything. And even though you might be ending a session kind of at that high point, coming back in, finishing off is the most, you know, kind of needed thing for an epilogue, to have that closure, to have that sense of, okay, we accomplished something, but it's like, how many movies have you watched where credits roll and you're like, wait, that's it? Because, you know, like the goal of the hero happened And there was nothing after that. You know, I mean, granted, some people joke that there are too many epilogue scenes in Lord of the Rings, but at the same time, you know, the journey of those characters and, like, you know, how their life ended and where it went. Like, if anything, that's kind of a
satisfying.
Really, yeah, it's a good example of a satisfying ending to give you those kind of pathways and everything. Like, could it have ended with Aragorn saying, you kneel to no one? Yeah, but knowing what happened kind of after that is still kind of important and enriches that whole journey that they went on. So being able to do that with your players and the world that they live in is, you know, going to be enriching. And that's where a lot of the big memories are going to be for the campaign. Like, yeah, there's going to be the time that Susie rolled the crit death save, got back with one hit point, and then on her next turn was able to finish off the Lich's phylactery so that they couldn't respawn. Yeah, that is going to be one of those memorable moments. But knowing that, you know, once that happened, she then went and became the captain of the city guard and trained others to follow in her footsteps to take up arms against evil in the future. That's a really satisfying thing and shows the presence and influence that that character had in the world, especially going forward to new generations. You know, just have that little like end point to just really drive home this mattered to the world.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's always a very bittersweet thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you end a campaign, especially one that's been going on for so long, especially if it's one where people are having to split up or leave or something like that afterwards. But like Ben said, it's a lot of times the small moments, the very character-centric moments that you will remember the most. And so as you're planning an epilogue, that's kind of the thing to keep in the forefront of your mind, is the satisfying endings for the characters, making sure that everyone gets their chance to shine and kind of send off their character in a way that is in a way that is I guess true to the nature of the campaign.
Yeah.
And that's where you will get the most satisfaction as a player and as a DM, because you will remember those moments.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But we love to hear from anyone who has finished a campaign before. How did you do your epilogue? How did you do your ending? Because everyone does it differently. Especially if you're running a module, because like ending a module off can be very different than ending a like ongoing world campaign as well. And I have a lot less experience on the module side of things, from an ending. So we'd love to hear, in Discord and email, anybody who's ended a campaign and how you did it. Okay, so real fast, before we start to wrap up, I did want to shout out that if you are a big Forgotten Realms person, if that is your campaign world of choice, there is a really cool Humble Bundle going on right now that is supporting education of children in need. With First Book, this charity bundle is a massive collection of Forgotten Realms books. There are multiple sizes, but the big one is the entire 40-item bundle that you can get if you pledge $18 or more. And these are just a massive library of Forgotten Realms authors, Aaron M. Evans, Richard Lee Briers, Forgotten Realms creator Ed Greenwood himself, You can go ahead. We'll have the link in the show notes on DeanDiscussions.com so you can check it out and grab it if Forgotten Realms is a place where you find yourself spending a lot of your time.
Or if you want to know more about the world of Baldur's Gate 3. I'll just bring it back. That's all.
Yeah. It is in the Forgotten Realms.
There's a lot more there than just Baldur's Gate, but yeah.
Elminster's got several books. I was looking through the thing. I'm seeing his name on like three or four. So you got all your wizard things. But yeah, it's quite the collection of old Forgotten Realms books. So if that's a setting you love or you're playing in, probably worth a look for pickup and support a good cause. All right. So with that, we almost always end the episode talking a little bit about what's going on in our own games. Ben, we'll start with you. I know you got to do something kind of cool this last weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. We still haven't picked up in my home campaign yet. I'm still very burnt out, like incredibly so from the end of the year work and everything like that. So we're not 100% back in on that. But Nevermore and I did get to go to our local game store and do a Wizards of the Coast play test. And I asked specifically, can I talk about it? And they said, you didn't sign an NDA. Talk about it to your heart's content. So guess what? This is where I'm going to talk about it. So, first of all, one of the things that was kind of different and new is that they had us download the, what is it? It's the Magic the Gathering Companion app, just to like kind of sign into the store so that they can actually track that we were there, because they're looking at that going forward for like, you know, kind of Westmarch kind of gameplay and stuff. I don't know if it was specifically our store for that, or if that's something that a companion app is going to be used like for, you know, big kind of gathering Westmarch kind of things as well. So kind of, you know, you sign in, that you're there, that you played, so they can kind of, you know, kind of keep track of that and stuff, which I thought was actually a really good idea to, you know, kind of go with that, especially if they're able to add into that, like, you know, XP or levels or loot that's been given out or something like that, which I think would be really neat. But the actual game that we played itself was, I didn't get a whole lot of information of like what it is, but it seemed like it was a pack of adventures for this type of situation entirely, for like, you know, multiple tables to kind of play through. So we were given a, basically, you know, assigned table. They had level one characters to choose from. They're all pre-made. And we had about, I think, four or five different tables. And there was like, you know, four or five people at each table. So it was, you know, a bunch of people kind of playing this thing. So they had, you know, one overall DM who said, gave us the premise. And the idea was all of us were hired to go to a, you know, like a lost library to try to find a specific book. And each group went to a different place. From what I can tell, all the adventures were essentially the same adventure, but maybe peppered with like different monsters or something, but the layout was similar and stuff. Because a table near us had a similar situation to what we had. So I'm guessing, you know, kind of easier to have multiple tables going on, you know, because everybody's at their own table. You can have the same adventure if you really need to. But we got teleported to our, you know, lost library in Icewind Dale, which is great because, you know, I played through Rime of the Frostmane, so I was totally familiar with that area. But we were in a library, so it didn't matter anyway. But when we went in there, we did basically, you know, a nice dungeon crawl, got through. Sorry, I know I'm jumping around a lot, but so the characters that they gave us, we got to choose between a bunch of different classes. Nevermore chose a sorcerer. I did a bard. The person next to me did a wizard. And then the last person was a barbarian. So we are very magic heavy and a barbarian with like no heals, which was great. They also gave us a couple of potions that we can use and stuff like that. The thing about the characters, though, is that they gave us character cards. And since they were all pre-made, it had, you know, like the normal stats on there. And then like your proficiencies and stuff. But I don't know if this is, you know, aimed more towards new players or not, because it didn't have all the different abilities. So like if I wanted to do something I wasn't proficient in, it didn't say it on there. But of course I knew what the stat was. So when I, you know, rolled for it, I just added my, you know, whatever modifier and stuff it was. And then it was very simplified because it was missing certain things, like the gnome didn't have anything on their sheet that said that they had dark vision, which is kind of, you know, not very gnomish because they're supposed to have it. As a bard, they chose my spells for me, which my cantrip was Mage Hand and my spell was Thunder Wave.
Okay.
So I'm like, my first bit of feedback was, as a level one, don't give me Thunder Wave because I could TPK the entire party. But you know, whatever. So they didn't have like spell slots per se, but they had, you know, you can use this spell twice a day. And, then I was a dragonborn. So I also had flame breath, which was, you know, came in rather handy and stuff. As well as, you know, like your different equipment and everything. They said what your AC was, initiative bonus and all that. So simplified versions of character sheets, but you know, level one. So it's not like we had a whole ton of stuff that we could do anyway. But as we went through, we, you know, had a lot of fun, you know, regular kind of dungeon crawly stuff and everything. As a bard, I was rolling real high on my deception. I was able to talk us through a ton of different, you know, potential combat encounters. For me, my whole point was we were hired to relieve the people who were there, like guarding and searching. And so it worked every time. I was rolling amazingly well on all those, which is great. And our scapegoat was, oh yeah, when you get back to base, just ask for Owen. He's the one who hired us. So just threw that name out there because, you know, whatever. But yeah, everybody believed us. It was good. It was nice. We got to the point where there was like a summoning circle and we're like, okay, well, let's see if we can use it. Cause our sorcerer was able to, so she went ahead and did that. And then we had a ghost that was with us, as you know, like a summoned creature. That's where we heard another table was summoning something as well. It was, you know, whatever, but basically what happened is you roll a die and then the organizer would come and then, you know, say, what did you get? And then give it a card based off of what your role was. So then, you know, you have that to use, which was kind of cool, you know, kind of incorporated that where different summoning circles can pull in different things and stuff. And then as we kind of went through and, you know, did our final fight, we ended up, you know, finding the magic book. This is the one, this is what it is. The organizer came over, had a bunch of cards and say, okay, you know, blindly pick one. And that's how we knew if we actually found the one that everybody was looking for, or if we just had, you know, another magical book as, you know, a reward. So it was a way to kind of incorporate a lot of different tables together, looking for that one goal. And at the beginning of the session, they gave us all ascending stones so that we can tell other tables, you know, hey, we found the book or not, so that they would know that they can, like, you know, either continue exploring or leave because, you know, the prize had been found. So it was kind of an interesting, neat way to incorporate it. I can tell you right now, we did not find the one that we wanted. We got our other random book. So yay. But you know, once we got back, then that's when they, you know, had us kind of draw for loot and everything. And it was just kind of a neat, you know, experience interacting, but not really with the other tables, but knowing we were all on the same adventure working towards a common goal. And it was a lot of fun. I actually really enjoyed it. And our DM was great. But yeah, overall it was a neat little concept. I kind of would have liked to create my own character, but that's just because I've been playing for, you know, years.
Sure.
But, you know, as it was, as a level one character, we did all right. there was a couple instances where like, oh, we're going to die. But we pulled through and we made it. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Thanks for sharing. Like they, I've played in one, I think they're usually called like epics before, right? Where it's a bunch of different tables working, in different parts of a shared story.
Yeah.
And then depending on how, certain tables do at certain points, it can affect other tables, and things, and kind of, they kind of go in stages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A very neat concept. They're kind of hard to pull off, but you do see them kind of at conventions and stuff is where you'll normally see that type of thing, or very specific events that are meant just for them.
Yeah.
So it sounded like a very, very small, like a smaller scale version of that.
Yeah. So if this is something that, you know, WotC is really kind of trying to put out a market for, you know, like game stores or conventions or something like that. I think that it was, you know, in my experience, very successful. I really enjoyed it. And I think that's, you know, it's another aspect to just overall D&D and gaming that is, you know, out there and something that they can do. Considering my local game store that always does, you know, one Saturday a month is the D&D game where they have like, you know, three blocks of sessions where there's like, you know, six to seven DMs all running a game at the same time. Having something where they can all, you know, be kind of prepped and run the same thing where we work together would be kind of cool. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, if they do something like this again, I'm probably going to jump at the chance.
Very cool.
What about you? How about you? Did you get a chance to play? Cause I know that we kind of left off with some pretty big stuff happening in your game.
Yes. We left off with someone getting exploded.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And someone losing a foot. Yeah, it was, we did play this past Friday, and it was a really interesting session because we started off, they're still like in the lion's den, so to speak, right after their friend just got kind of disintegrated before their eyes. And one of our players' characters lost a foot. And so I cannot say enough good things about my players, for just embracing the total emotionality of the moment.
Yeah.
And really playing in their characters and what they would do. So it was, they basically, had to cope with what they just saw, but also they had to leave so that more of them, were not picked off.
Yeah.
Essentially. And on top of that, they now have a character that is disabled, and cannot move very well, right?
Yeah, making escape and a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, making escape more difficult. So they had to work their way through that. So a third of the session was in a lot of ways them just getting out and coping and trying to figure out what they were going to do. So they were able to finally make it out after a few harrowing close calls with a few different things. And then they got back, and the rest of the session was really a just very heavy RP session about how each character dealt with grief.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because it's not something I necessarily like prompted them to do. It's something that was just very organic, and very natural. And I said, I have to give huge props to my players for, just dealing with that, I think, in a way that their characters would. And so after all that, one of our characters found what is essentially a note that was left by the character who died. As this character had basically placed contingencies for, it was a very, the character is very paranoid, kind of a Sherlock Holmes-ish type character.
Gotcha.
And it kind of placed contingencies. So we actually ended the session with the player characters kind of about to experience one of those contingencies. So it was, like I said, it was a very emotional session. And next session will be even more so, as they kind of come to grips with closure for their departed friend. And then in a lot of ways, trying to figure out what to do, right? Because they took a piece off the board, but then the bad guys took a piece off the board as well. And that piece happened to be one of their friends.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a really big deal, but I'm very excited to play again next week and go through the emotionality of it, because I've had a few sessions like that before. But you don't have characters die super often.
No,
not usually. Right. Depending on the type of game you're playing,
depending on the
style you're playing, obviously. The long-term campaigns though, it can happen. Revivify is a thing that can happen. But there's not a lot of cases where there's nothing left. There is no revivifying. There is no coming back from it. It is a consequence that happened because of decisions that the character and or party made. So this is, in some ways, this is a very new thing for my specific campaigns. And I wouldn't want to do it with any other group. Like it's been phenomenal. And the group storytelling, I was visiting a friend a few weeks ago and we were talking about Critical Role and, you know, how amazing it would be to play with those voice actors and such. And I was telling him, I was like, I have my own group of them.
Yeah.
They come to my house and we play every other week. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Like, we create those moments for ourselves. And we don't have to be voice actors or amazing actors or stream the game to tens of thousands of people. We create those moments ourselves. And there are so many tables that create those moments themselves. And until you DM or until you play in something like that, I don't think you can quite understand it until you've experienced it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. So very much looking forward to next session.
Good. It makes my heart happy that you have found a group like that, just like I have. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's a bond that is different than a lot of other stuff that you'll find. It's almost as if you are out there adventuring together. And it's really cool.
It's an experience that you rarely have without the right group of people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And not to say that there's a lot of D&D groups that you have that you can't have a good time or that you can't have good moments. But you know, this type of thing just hits different. if that mm-hmm. makes sense. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because you have a group like that. I've only experienced it one other time outside of my own campaigns.
Oh yeah.
I played a lot of really good D&D. I played a lot of really emotional D&D with other groups or with other tabletop RPGs. The only other time that I really felt it, and it's just the luck of the draw, super random, when I played the Magnus Archive game over RPG weekend, we all just synced so well. And the atmosphere was right. The game was right. The mood was right. The storyteller was right. And the group was right. And we had just that level of emotional moment, that level of RP that you seldom get anywhere else. So find your people. That's really all I can say. It's like find your people, have the moments, and experience it, because it's unlike anything else.
Very true.
Well, with that, Ben, I think that's a good stopping point. So thank you everyone for listening this far. Those that reach the end with us every other week. But before we go, as always, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
You bet. We want to hear about your epilogues. We want to hear about ideas that you've had or, you know, the journeys that your characters have been on. And the best place to share that is going to be our Discord channel. You can find that on, or a link to that on our website, dndiscussions.com. Also, while you're there, you can find every other episode that we've ever done, as well as links to our Blue Sky accounts as well. If you want to follow us on social media, Blue Sky is the way to do it. Find out what's going on in our lives, as well as, when new episodes come out and stuff like that. The show is D&D Discussions. You can find Ryan at TBK Zord. I am at Ben Bumhoffer. And then also, if you're sitting here thinking, gosh, I'd really like to hear these guys play D&D, well, you can hear one of us. I'm on Plus 5 to Hit. It is an actual play podcast. And stuff's happening. Doing amazing things. Lots of fun. We, in our last session that we recorded, we had kind of a back and forth of like, what are we doing? Because we needed to figure out what we were doing. I had fun with it. I like RP. In fact, I think our last session was mostly RP. So, we had a lot of fun going through that, having some good character interactions and you know, convincing a character that what we were doing was the right thing to do, the right path that we were on and stuff. And it was a good discussion overall in game. Lots of fun. But anyways, so that is Plus 5 to Hit. This show, D&D Discussions, again, dndiscussions.com, anywhere podcasts are played. Probably, because I think we're pretty much everywhere. But yeah. So everybody who's listening, thank you very much for all of your support. Thank you very much for listening. We love all of you. And Ryan, it is always a pleasure talking to you about this fun, wonderful hobby that we're both a part of. So thank you very much. So until next time, everybody, make sure to roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.